touch with Krishna constantly. The devotee, he is constantly thinking about Krishna, and by those thoughts is in touch with Krishna. But even more so when he has shakshat darshan, or direct darshan of Krishna, he is with Krishna, then his feelings of separation when Krishna is no longer with him impel him to think so deeply about Krishna and so intensely about Krishna that Krishna is with him. So whether Krishna is with him when he is not with him, or with him when he is with him, Krishna is always with his devotees. He is never, the devotee is never without Krishna, because the devotee is always chanting in Krishna's glories and thinking about Krishna, remembering Krishna, hearing about Krishna. So in any case, Uddhava began to describe Krishna, and in the end of the last chapter that we read in chapter 2, he began remembering Krishna and remembering his pastimes, the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan. So many wonderful pastimes in Vrindavan, culminating in Krishna's dancing with the young cowherd damsels of Braja, which was fully and only a display of Krishna's internal energy. Radha Krishna Pranaya Ladini Shakti Asmad. Only a display of Krishna enjoying with his different potencies. There's nothing to do with the dealings between men and women in the material world. So after describing those pastimes, with the cows, with Govardhan Hill, Krishna playing his flute, he would wander through the forests by the Yamuna, playing his flute and charming the cows, charming the cowherd boys, charming all the residents of Vrindavan. All the flowers, all the creepers, the Yamuna. When the Yamuna would hear the sound of Krishna's flute, the waves would stop flowing and it would become hard. And when hard mountains would hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they would melt in ecstasy. And the cows would not be able to drink the milk from their mother, the calves. And the birds would stop flying and sit and listen. So charming was the wonderful sound of Krishna's flute. So Uddhava was remembering everything about Krishna in Vrindavan, his lifting Govardhan Hill for how many days?
Seven
days. With which hand? If you were there, he would have lifted it with his right hand. Ah, Krishna, why are you lifting with left hand? But left hand. So effortlessly, Krishna lifted the hill to protect his devotees. Indra was pouring down so much rain. He was angry at Krishna because Krishna stopped the performance of the sacrifice to Indra, and Indra was furious. So he punished the residents of Vrindavan, and Krishna protected them effortlessly. So after remembering all these pastimes, then Uddhava began to remember and say in very short form verses that would remind Vidur about Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan. And this is the subject, entire subject of chapter 3. So we've asked all of the devotees to remember something and say something about Krishna's pastimes outside of Vrindavan from these verses. So, we'll ask anyone who didn't speak last time, because last time I didn't call on everyone. Anyone who didn't speak last time, like to say something first? course, it's all wonderful and interesting, but some parts that struck me at this time. So this is from the second verse, when Krishna brought back the son of his teacher, Sandipani Muni. So Krishna went to Gurukula in Ujjain, and he in 64 days, he learned all the subjects. And then, as it was appropriate, when it was time for him to leave, he asked his teacher, "Please, you've given me so much, you've taught me so much, what can I do for you? I want to reciprocate with you." This is called Guru Dakshin. And the learning is not complete until that is given. So, here's what Prabhupada says. The Lord is constitutionally well versed in all the Vedas. And yet to teach by example that everyone must go to learn the Vedas from an authorized teacher and must satisfy the teacher by service and reward, he himself adopted this system. The Lord offered his services to his teacher, Sandipani Muni, and the Muni, knowing the power of the Lord, asked something which was impossible to be done by anyone else. The teacher asked that his beloved son, who had died, be brought back to him, and the Lord fulfilled the request. The Lord is therefore not an ingrate. What does ingrate mean? What does it mean that he's not an ingrate? He's not ungrateful to anyone who renders him some sort of service. The devotees of the Lord who always engage in his loving service are never to be disappointed in the progressive march of devotional service. Because Krishna is a person and he has such wonderful qualities. Yeyetam mam prapadyante. Because Krishna accepts the service of his devotees, he is willing to render so much service to the devotee. And what service or what does the devotee want from Krishna? Only to be able to serve purely and to always remember Krishna. And Krishna helps him by carrying him back to Godhead. So that was, I thought, a nice point. Sweet point. Another one from text 5. Just to please his dear wife, the Lord brought back the Parijata tree from heaven. So which dear wife was he trying to please? Satyavama. Just as an ordinary husband would do. But Indra, the king of heaven, induced by his wives, henpecked as he was, ran after the Lord with full force to fight him. So Prabhupada, in his purport, criticizes henpecked husbands. But aside from that, towards the end, we'll read the beginning. No? Yeah, the last paragraph. So Krishna went to heaven to return the earrings of Aditi. He went on Garuda and he brought Satyabhauma with him. And Satyabhauma wanted a flower from the Parijata tree, and Krishna said, "Why one flower? You can take the whole tree." So Krishna took the tree, and Indra was furious because this Parijata can only grow in heaven, the heavenly planets. So he said, "You cannot have this." And he even forgot, he was induced by his wife, Satyadevi, Devi, "Don't let him take this. This isn't meant for mere mortals, for dwelling on the earth." And he had forgotten that Krishna had just returned these most valuable earrings of Indra's mother. So there was a fight, and of course Indra lost, and Krishna took the Parijata down. And Prabhupada says, "The Lord is fully independent, and by his will only, he can have hundreds and thousands of wives like Satyabhauma. He was not therefore attached to Satyabhauma because she was a beautiful wife, but he was pleased with her devotional service and thus wanted to reciprocate the unalloyed devotion of his devotee." This again is Krishna's bhaktivatsalya mood. Atma Parjanta Vadanyata. The Krishna will even give himself to his devotees. Krishna drives the chariot, Sanayor Ubiyo Madhye Rattam Stapaya Me Chuta. Krishna is driving the chariot of Arjuna. Krishna is recovering the son of his teacher. And here Krishna is getting the Parijata plant tree for Satyabhama. Another one. If when we're saying these pastimes, if anyone has anything to add, please say so. Kaliyavana, the king of Magdha and Salva, that's three different personalities, attacked the city of Mathura. This was after Krishna had killed whom? Kamsa, not Draupadi. After Krishna killed Kamsa and made Ugrasena the king, the wives of Kamsa's father, Jarasandha, attacked, and also Salva attacked, and also Kaliyavana attacked the city of Mathura. Immediately, there was no peace. But when the city was encircled by their soldiers, the Lord refrained from killing them personally, just to show the power of his own men. So Krishna didn't have to divide himself into hundreds or thousands or seven or anything like that. He could have, like that, and they all would have died. But Krishna instead wishes to empower his devotees to do these things. Why? Because his devotees will become glorified in that way. So Prabhupada explains in the purport. By such acts, the Lord wanted to exhibit the prowess of his devotees. Actually, the prowess of the devotees is actually Krishna working through them. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am the prowess of the powerful. I am the ability in man. So Krishna wanted to exhibit the prowess of his devotees as if he were personally unable to fight, but his devotees could kill them. So Krishna wanted his devotees to get the glory. The relationship of the Lord with his devotees is a very happy one. Actually, the Lord descended at the request of Brahma in order to kill all the undesirables of the world. But to divide the share of glory, he sometimes engaged his devotees to take the credit. What's a good example of Krishna using a devotee to kill so many of the undesirable, the burden of the earth? Where did this especially take place? Kurukshetra. The battle of Kurukshetra was designed by the Lord himself. But just to give credit to his devotee Arjun, nimittamatram bhavasavya sachin, he played the part of the charioteer while Arjuna was given the chance to play the fighter and thus become the hero of the battle of Kurukshetra. What he wants to do himself by his transcendental plans, he executes through his confidential devotees. That is the way of the Lord's mercy towards his pure unalloyed devotees. So that immediately brings to mind the spreading of the Krishna consciousness, the chanting of Hare Krishna throughout the world by Srila Prabhupada. Such a confidential devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Mahaprabhu said that his holy names would be chanted all over the world, and Mahaprabhu did this through Srila Prabhupada. So the devotee, he gives credit to the Lord, and the Lord gives credit to the devotee. The Lord doesn't want to take the glory for himself, even though it cannot be said that he wasn't the one who did it. It's ultimately Krishna is the karta. He is the doer. It is Krishna who does it, working through his devotees. But he wants to give credit to the devotee, that the devotee can do things that even I can't do. And the devotee, he doesn't want to take any credit for himself. No. This is Krishna. This is my guru. This is the great Acharya. Never any credit for himself. That is the way of the Lord's mercy towards his pure, unalloyed devotees. Another point from the story. At the end of the battle of Kurukshetra, this is text 14, the abatement of the earth's great burden, 18 Akshohinis, has now been defeated. This is what the Lord said, because there were 18, there was 11 and 7 divisions of soldiers killed in this battle of Kurukshetra. So that's 18. This has now been effected with the help of Drona, Bhishma, Arjun, and Bhim. But what is this? There is still the great strength of the Yadu dynasty born of myself, which may be a more unbearable burden. So this, how the Yadu dynasty, Krishna's own kinfolk, his own family members, could be a burden. So Prabhupada explains, in the purport, explains the comment to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So this is in the past. This pastime takes place, or is described, it's going to be described a little bit later, in the next chapter, a little bit, or what happened right after, but it is described as in the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. Although there may be a great increase in population on the surface of the earth, if the people are exactly in line with God consciousness, and are not miscreants, such a burden on the earth is a source of pleasure for her, the earth. There are two kinds of burdens. There is the burden of the beast and the burden of love. The burden of the beast is unbearable, but the burden of love is a source of pleasure. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti describes the burden of love very practically. He says that the burden of the husband on the young wife, the burden of the child on the lap of the mother, and the burden of wealth on the businessman, although actually burdens from the viewpoint of heaviness, are sources of pleasure. And in the absence of such burdensome objects, one may feel the burden of separation, which is heavier to bear than the actual burden of love. When Lord Krishna referred to the burden of the Yadu dynasty on the earth, he referred to something different than the burden of the beast. The large numbers of family members born of Lord Krishna counted to some millions, and there was certainly a great increase in the population of the earth. But because all of them were expansions of the Lord himself by his transcendental plenary expansions, they were a source of great pleasure for the earth. When the Lord referred to them in connection with the burden on the earth, he had in mind their imminent disappearance from the earth. All the members of the family of the Lord were incarnations of different demigods, and they were to disappear from the surface of the earth along with the Lord. When he referred to the unbearable heaviness on the earth in connection with the Yadu dynasty, he was referring to the burden of their separation. Srila Jiva Goswami confirms this inference. So the burden of them leaving the earth was too much for the earth to bear. He also, Srila Jiva Goswami, or Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, also describes it in another way, what Krishna meant by the Yadu dynasty being a burden of the earth. When Krishna would leave the planet, the Yadu dynasty, who had such an intimate relationship with Krishna, would go mad and trample on the earth, causing the earth great difficulty. So therefore, Krishna decided to remove the Yadu dynasty from the earth when he himself would leave as well. So there's explanations of this in the 11th canto, how the Yadu dynasty, and this will come up in tomorrow's verses, how they fought amongst each other, and we already spoke about this, being intoxicated, but actually it was just like a magician. A magician comes, he shows some magic. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells her how a magician once came, and he showed all his family members fighting over something, and then killing each other, and then the magician himself killing himself, and then a few days later returning or sending a message saying, could you pay me for the show that I just showed you? Because it was just a display of some type of magic or some type of hypnotism or something like that. So actually there was no killing, there was no this, there was no that. So when Krishna takes the Yadu dynasty from the earth, this is just display of his yoga maya, so that the pastime ends in a wonderful way. Because Krishna is capable of so many things. Next. When they quarreled amongst themselves, the Yadu dynasty, influenced by intoxication, with their eyes red like copper because of their drinking madhu, then only will they disappear. Otherwise it will not be possible. On my disappearance, this incident will take place. Because who can kill? Because Krishna says, Mare Krishna Rake Ke. Well, Krishna doesn't say, this is a saying. Mare Krishna Rake Ke. Rake Krishna Mare Ke. That if Krishna wants to protect someone, no one can touch them. No one can hurt them. So the Yadu dynasty, being under the protection of Krishna, no one could remove them from the earth. The Kuru dynasty, the burden of the earth, they were removed by them fighting each other. The Pandavas and the Kurus, the 18 Akshahinis were fighting each other, and they removed each other from the earth in the battle of Kurukshetra. But who could remove the Yadu dynasty from the earth? They were invincible, invulnerable, because they were protected by Krishna. So Krishna had to devise a way to remove them, and they ended up removing each other from the world. Prabhupada explains in the purports. So why did Krishna do such a thing? The devotees and associates of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. What does that mean, to be completely surrendered soul? What does that mean? Yeah, with great love. To be surrendered doesn't mean that you just do what you're told. And inside, that mean an inside thinking, boy, I wish I was doing something else. A surrendered soul, a completely surrendered soul, because of his love for Krishna, wants to serve Krishna. And he gives himself, he uses himself, his individuality, his nature, everything according to how Krishna will be pleased. So the devotees and associates of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. They are transcendental instruments in the hand of the Lord. What a nice expression. They're instruments in the hand of the Lord. When you think of instrument, what do you think of? A sword. What do you think of? What do you think of? You think of Sangopastana. Yes. What do you think of when you think of instrument? A saxophone. What do you think of? What do you think of? Electrical instrument. So when the music is coming out of the saxophone or the guitar, or when the some kind of, what comes out of an electronic instrument? Okay. When vibrations are coming out of this particular electronic instrument, who is actually doing it? It's the person working the instrument. It's not the instrument that's making the music. It's the person who is playing the instrument. It's not the instrument who has the ability and the talent. It's the person. So Krishna would play his devotees like instruments. Kartals, harmoniums, and Mridanga. So the devotees and associates of the Lord are completely surrendered souls. They are the transcendental instruments in the hands of the Lord and can be used in any way the Lord desires. So Krishna uses his devotees. The pure devotees enjoy such pastimes of the Lord because they want to see him happy. So the Lord, the devotees, their pleasure is being instrumental for the Lord. That is their happiness. And the Lord uses them and they get happiness being used by the Lord. Devotees of the Lord never assert independent individuality. On the contrary, they utilize their individuality in pursuit of the desires of the Lord. Isn't that nice? And the cooperation of the devotee with the Lord makes perfect scene of the Lord's pastime. So, who is actually doing everything? It is ultimately Krishna. But yet, it is not only ultimately Krishna, it's the living entity, the devotee, who by his free will is fully cooperating with the Lord. So the devotee, when you ask the devotee who did it, he's done something wonderful, what does he say? He said, oh, it is Krishna who's done it. And when you ask Krishna who did it, he says, oh, it is my devotee who's done it. So who has actually done it? What do you think?
I don't know, I didn't do it.
Huh? What do you think? If it comes out wrong, if it was Krishna who did it.
There used to be a TV show, Who Done It?
Who Done It? That was before our time, Bunky. That was in the 1800s. So who actually does it? Ultimately, Krishna is sarvakarana karanam. But yet, it's still the individuality of the devotee that is cooperating with the desire of Krishna. Sarvakarana karanam means he's the cause of all causes. But yet, the devotees have individuality. So their desire is also making it happen. Okay, there's so many more. Any questions or comments?
So tomorrow, we shall continue with the regular format of the classes, and we'll have chapter 4. We'll begin. And we'll cover, if Krishna allows, 1 through 13. Yep.
Why does Kama desire to forget Krishna? What's the question?
Why would someone desire to forget Krishna? Do you mean, by asking that question, do you mean why would someone in Goloka Vrindavan? You mean, if we're in Goloka Vrindavan, then how is it possible for us to turn our back on Krishna? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
So that's the question about it, why the soul fell down. But see, you know, it's like this. There's many ways to explain this. But I'll just make 2 points. One, we read one very interesting lecture by Prabhupada, which he gave in Japan in 1972, and I think I was there, actually, when he said, we don't actually fall down, we're dreaming. This is our illusion. Susupti, means deep sleep. So we have taken some rest only. Taken a nap. Yes, and having nightmares, yes. And sometimes we're having pleasurable dreams, but mostly it's a nightmare because the pleasurable dreams end and turn into nightmares. Yes, thank you. So that's one answer, way to understand it. The other way that Prabhupada would explain is that why would we do this? And the answer is we have independence and that is never taken away from us. So why does someone make a wrong choice? You can give so many reasons, but ultimately it comes back to some free will and free decision on his part. That we have to take responsibility for. So practically speaking, actually speaking, it's not possible for us to understand how and why. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the living entity can't understand, but Krishna knows. Why? So there's the element of our free will in there that we've just decided to take a little chuti. You know what chuti means? Chuti means holiday, vacation. This is all this Krishna being the center. Let's take a little vacation from that. Yes, it's so wonderful, but I have another idea. I want to try something else for a little while, so I'll just take a little sleep, take a snap. And see what it's like if I were Krishna. That's what it's like. This is little, some independent choice in there that we want to see what it's like if I was the center of everything and everything revolved around me. But everything could never revolve around us, in fact. But that's what it's like, in case you haven't noticed, being in a material mind and material body is an illusion. We think everything is revolving around us. But so many different individuals with all their different illusions, everyone thinking that everything is revolving around me. That's the material world. It's the land of illusion where everyone is imagining that everything revolves around us and that Krishna even should revolve around us. He should, why has he done this to me? He should come here and change, do this and that and this and that. Here, boy. Yeah, boy, come, Krishna. No, he is the Supreme Lord. And we are just tiny, insignificant, sleeping servants. So therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakura sings, jeev jago, Gaura Chandra bole. That Lord Gaurasundar sings, please wake up, you sleeping souls. You are sleeping on the lap of the witch Maya. So if you want to understand, how is it that we could have done this? It's not a, if you look at it sort of analytically, if it was so wonderful, how could you turn it down? How could you go backwards? How could you leave something so wonderful? People only want to leave something when it's not so wonderful. But that's not always the case. Sometimes people are, people just curious sometimes what it's like. There's some misuse of free will in there. Yes.
Are you aware of the psychological process on rationalizing?
I'm usually quite aware of it now that you mention it. Well, now it does, when we rationalize things. In contemporary terms, it is called denial. Or you just can't face the fact that you made a mistake and you blame it on everyone else. You project your faults on others. Like once, Madhu Mangal once, Krishna was playing his flute. And the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, came to hear. And Maro Mangal became terrified. He first didn't recognize them. And he thought, oh, look, these great Rakshasas have come up in the clouds and they've come. This is, and he became very, very frightened, and he started saying things about these Rakshasas. And he was frightened. And then Krishna said, those aren't Rakshasas, you should be careful what you're saying. This is Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. And then Maru Mangal said, oh, just see the ignorance of these other cowherd boys. They thought they were Rakshasas. And he began strutting around and saying, yes, I all along knew because I am a Brahmin and I am all knowing. So I knew that they were actually the demigods. And you cowherd boys, you were all afraid. Just see how foolish you are. And Lord Krishna said, just see how he has projected his fault on others. So that's usually the case. Whatever faults we have, we project on others. And that's not exactly rationalizing, is it? But it's also a psychological principle. Whatever faults we have, we project on others. And therefore, if we want to find out what faults we have, all we have to do is look at what we don't like to see in others, and we often see, well, what do you know? This is my own fault. We have projected it on others. Okay. So tomorrow we'll continue.